Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I am a writer, editor, and reporter for ArizonaSports.com, where on that very website, you can read the Empire of the Suns blog, where we cover the Phoenix Suns. I say we because I'm not going to be talking to myself this podcast. I'm joined by Kevin Zimmerman, who holds all those same titles. Hey, Kevin, how is your Tuesday afternoon going?
You know, had some cannoli cake, thanks to Gambo. It was his decision. He forced the hand of the HAR people to let us have cannoli cake.
Inside Arizona Sports office tidbit, we have birthday cake every month, and when it is Gambo's month, he pretty much just... Around August, we start to hear about the cannoli cake a little bit. And then
that cannoli cake drum.
The mentions keep getting a little bit louder, and then by October, he's talking about it every day, and then there's the cannoli cake on the boat.
It was good. It tasted like chocolate cake at first, and I was like, my cake palate must be trash, and everyone was like, dude, it tastes different than chocolate cake.
I don't know what trash cake flavor is. Like, I can't name one off the top of my head, but at least he's not doing that.
Right.
So, shouts to Gambo.
No complaints.
So for this podcast, we were looking at the Thanksgiving break, and I say we, and like more me specifically, and I was DMing Kevin. I was kind of like, why don't we just zoom out a bit and just look at our takeaways on the season as a whole? So that's something that can hold up over the rest of the week and something we can talk about regardless of what happens in all these games. And then Monday happened, which wasn't a huge newsworthy Suns day necessarily, but there were just two pretty big stories where it would be like the lead of our podcast on either week it would happen, and it happened on the same day. The first of those was the big starting lineup change. Isaiah Kanan to the bench. The Suns are no longer starting a traditional point guard. Now Igor Kokoschkov after the game wouldn't fully commit to this being the long-term plan, so we'll see, and we'll talk about that. But the other is the dysfunction in Washington continuing, and the report from Adrian Wojnarowski that the Wizards are open to considering trading guys like John Wall, but more importantly, guys like Bradley Beal and Otto Porter, who we are going to be talking about as well. Do you want to start with, we should probably start with the Suns and Philly, right?
Yeah, so I thought that game coming after the previous game where they won was good. Look, we've spent this whole first stretch of the season talking about this team that doesn't try, that looks like it doesn't care. I think, and Utah fans, I keep saying this, Utah fans are like, it's going to take a while to figure it out. And it seems that they're getting more used to what Igor wants. They're playing more naturally within the offense. And look, it helps when your best players are on the court. And without a point guard, that's the case. That's their five best players, I would say. Trevor Ariza looked pretty good. Mikal Bridges still looked good, even though he got in foul trouble. Like, again, we keep going back to the depth of this team. It doesn't have much talent, but you put the five best players on the court and they just happen to fit together and make you switchable and have at least smart playing. If there's not a whole lot of playmakers, then it's going to turn out decently. And they showed a lot of fight. Obviously, the Sixers didn't, you know, have it in the first half, and then they kind of clicked and we're like, we're not losing to this team, which every team's going to do. And yeah, it's progress, and it's especially progress coming after that Spurs win.
For sure. They've now had three straight games where they have been competitive. That sounds like I'm being sarcastic and making a joke and saying, haha, good job, good for you. But that is progress compared to what we've seen over the course of the season in terms of consistency. Our pal David Nash tweeted out, ever since the Suns had 16 assists and 20 turnovers against Brooklyn, the home game where they did that strategy to DeAndre Ayton defensively, their assist to turnover numbers in the past six games, 25-15, 16-14, 25-18, 27-16, 25-14, and 25-13. So it seems like that level of comfort is at least there offensively. I think I see a guy like Trevor Ariza, it's starting to feel a little bit more natural for him because he has been this team's secondary ball handler, essentially. There was one possession where it was your typical wing is going from the corner to the wing, coming off a down screen, and they're turning the corner and they can make a play at the top of the key or whatever. Mikal Bridges was coming around one of those, and the driving lane was wide open, and he instead kicked it to the other wing to TJ Warren, and that's one of those where you go, okay, they're still putting it together, especially a guy like Mikal who's coming into the starting lineup, and TJ Warren has those moments where on those types of plays, sometimes he runs a two, he had a nice two-man game with Rashawn Holmes a couple of possessions last night, but for him and Bridges specifically, there are still moments where those guys are still figuring out the system, but it's still coming together pretty well for them, I think. And I think what this shows through 16 games is the vitriolic state of the fan base we talked about last podcast, with how demanding people were getting about and sick of the rotations people were getting. Igor has done pretty much everything that looks like it should have been done, and he's done it much quicker than we thought he would. My whole stance on the thing from last night's game and my takeaway as a whole on it would be that he looked like a coach who said, okay, I have this new roster, I have this new system, this is the thing we talked about for months. I'm going to keep it simple. We're going to play a power forward here. We're going to play a point guard here. And I think last night he was just like, whatever. I'm just going to play my best players. I tried this as hard as possible. I tried to give Ryan Anderson a chance. I even gave Dragan Bender a chance the other night. I'm just not even going to play a power forward off the bench. I'm just going to have Ariza or Warren play that spot pretty much every minute we're out on the court. I'm not even going to look at it like we necessarily need a point guard. I think Isaiah Kanan would have played less last night had the foul trouble not been an issue for them. And we saw more, what did John Calipari used to call it when he would take five guys in and put five guys out, platoons? Is that what he would call it? He kind of had his platoon substitution where it's like, okay, Jackson and Bridges are coming off the bench together at this same time at this moment. And he had those types of substitution patterns, but last night he was just changing it everywhere. And again, foul trouble was something that might have factored in. But there were points where Troy Daniels was the quote-unquote small forward on the floor, Jamal Crawford was, or Devin Booker was. And I just saw him saying, all right, I tried to keep it as traditional as possible for the sake of stability and everything, and that's why I believe he did it. But I think in the game he was like, okay, I'm just going to full out just put our best players out there, do what's best for the team as a whole. People might be saying, well, why didn't you do that sooner? Why isn't he doing that right away? It's what I just talked about. It's a brand new team. You can't just go out there and play positionless, switchy basketball right away with a new unit that's all new together in his new system. It just doesn't work like that. And he gave it as much patience and leeway as possible until this game, I think. And I think we're going to see this type of pattern from him more often throughout the rest of the season.
To that point, and trying to draw that conclusion, I think just go back to what he said, like, all along. When you look at them playing Ryan Anderson, Trevor Ariza, even Isaiah Kanan early on, when every time someone even asked him about DeAndre at the beginning of training camp, or even before summer league, it was DeAndre just needs to find his own way at his own pace, basically. He said it in different words, but he'd say, I want him to go out and enjoy basketball, learn. I don't have these expectations of you need to go out and get 17 and 10 every night. It wasn't about that. It was trying to make DeAndre most comfortable. More recently, it's been, all right, we've seen flashes out of Mikal Bridges off the bench. And every time you'd go back and ask him after the game, hey, Mikal played really well. Is there a chance he could get more playing time? He'd be like, no, I'm just worried about, you know, he still made mistakes, but he looks good. He's our future. We just got to let him come along at his own pace. And so now that you start seeing him giving Mikal those minutes and playing Booker instead of Isaiah Kanan, it's all about that, where it's he was protecting them. Like, to your point, he was playing Ryan Anderson and playing a traditional, here's a four man, here's a five, playing a lot of Ariza. And now at that point where we saw that Ryan Anderson is struggling to do that, Ariza much less so. But he's like, all right, Mikal's going to eat into Isaiah's minutes because he's a better player right now. Like, legitimately, he might be a better player right now than Isaiah Kanan. And so that's kind of where we find ourselves. And really, we've talked about this, about making rash decisions. It's been quick, like 16 games in. That's, you know, you might think that's a long time. It feels like it's been a long time because a lot of losses have piled up, but he just was protecting his guys, I think. And I think You got to realize that where he goes from here, yeah, maybe more matchup based, more playing those guys like that.
And fans picture him like holding hands with Ryan Anderson, skipping around Mikal Bridges while he's in jail. It's like that. That's not what was happening at all.
Yeah,
but it's to your point. He was essentially protecting them. So I think the next place this discussion goes is Point Book. He looked great last night. He had 37 and 8. Most notably for me, he had 7 of his 8 assists in the first half. So
turnovers
were down. He had 0 in the first half, yeah. 2 in the second half. But 7 of his 8 assists came in the first half. I think there was some adjusting there. And again, this is going to take time for him to get better. There's a little bit of snark on the old TL, on the old timeline. When it comes to Point Book and saying, oh, look at this. Look at how great this works. And the thing about Booker playing point guard is this is a long-term issue. This is not something where over a game or two it's going to look like it presents itself. This is something where you're just putting more wear and tear on your superstar player. You're asking more of him every night now by default in this type of situation. Now, when we bring up the Wizards, we're going to be talking about a situation in which you're not even bringing in a point guard necessarily, but you're bringing in a player who can help him carry the load offensively. And that's really what he needs right now, because you look at what we just talked about 5 minutes ago, Trevor Ariza is the secondary ball handler on this team, and that's putting a lot of pressure on Booker. DeAndre Ayton is not at a point in his game right now at all where you can throw it down to him 10, 12 times a night and have him run an offensive possession out of the post. That's just not where he's at either. Booker is really the only guy right now. So that's where I worry slightly. With him, because long term it's just wear and tear. It's a move you look at maybe when he's 25, 26, 27 in his prime years. You don't need to have him run with a point guard, but you need someone else who can really carry the load offensively. And that's where I hesitate and say this is not a really good idea. But with that being said, and this is something I'm going to bring up once we get to our takeaways from the season throughout, the front office did this. This is on no one else but the front office, putting Igor Kokoschkov in this place. I tweeted a couple of things last night when this all went down, and some of it was misinterpreted. Basically, what I was saying is the front office and the coach are not syncing up. And what I mean by that is the front office had a coach who said, I don't want to play this guy point guard. He's not a point guard. But the front office put him in a position where he had absolutely no choice but to play this guy point guard at a certain point in the season, pretty early, because that's how he is going to get his best team right now, is playing him at point guard.
Or Ryan McDonough had a point guard lined up to trade, and then they fired him, and then it didn't happen. So who knows?
Yeah, he went on the jump and said he had a couple of trades still lined up that he was looking into, like as he got fired, essentially. So who knows what would have happened there. But regardless, even if he would have acquired a point guard a week before the season, that's still pretty big failure on their part. And that's where I look at this and just say, I think this is a short-term thing, and I hope that it continues to be a short-term thing. I still fully endorse the idea of a stopgap point guard for a minimal asset or a mid-level asset, really, because I just don't think this is something that is sustainable and good for a player who, by the way, is continuing to rack up injuries and continuing to rack up missed games because of injuries. And I just don't want Booker to be a guy that's injury prone by the time he's 24 and in his prime and ready to actually be that guy who can carry that load. Because the bottom line is you're a 3-13 team anyway, so you shouldn't be putting him in these types of positions where you can add more risk long term.
The biggest thing for me is, well, one, they did that lineup, and I know they're going to keep doing Point Book, but they did that lineup against that team specifically because that team plays big. Booker's not going to want to guard point guards. That's just not something he's going to want to do. He's not going to want to guard McCollum or Lillard. He's not going to want to guard Steph Curry. So that's going to take some point booking out of there. But even when you look at the offensive end, and even if Isaiah Kanan's in there, to me, the biggest concern is just within single games. Like when you put a guy with the ball, the amount of energy expended just to have that guy score is a lot more than if he's working off screens in that offense. It's a lot harder. it's a lot just more work to shake guys off the bounce than it is to work off screens and have the play set you up or even put you in a good position just to start going one-on-one. And I think late in that Philly game, and even if you go a few games back, there have been times where you see Point Book just kind of forcing it, and it looks like he's forcing it, but that's because he's the point guard and the defense is already on him when he brings it across the half court line. So to me, that's in the more like schematic way a problem. So I agree with you, and I agree with your other points about long term, it's just not ideal. But yeah, it's... We still haven't learned what this front office is going to do.
Yeah, he also shoots more. This is a trend that started last year when, of course, he's going to take a lot of shots when he's playing with the type of roster he did last year. But he took 28 shots last night, and I remember there was a run of games last year where he took at least like 24 shots a game over like five straight games or something. And that's fine. You want your best player taking as many shots as possible, but at the same time, there's a nice little line of 18 to 21 shots a game that I think he can fall into, and you worry about efficiency dropping off at a certain point. But to what you were just bringing up, the worry is with the front office.
Yeah.
And how they are willing to, not willing to, but just how they are going to navigate this. Did you have any other takeaways really from the game before we move on?
I don't think so. The Ayton comments after were, you know, what we expected about him and Embiid, and they actually don't hate each other. Great. That's nice. It'll be a fun little back and forth. But yeah.
Yeah, I'll say on Ayton, that was a game, that was one of the games that worries me the most, and people are going to be, I'm going to explain what I mean by that, because his touch was automatic last night. His jumper was on, his hook shot was on, everything was on, and at the end of the day, it felt like he barely impacted the game.
Yeah.
And that's where I just, that's where I worry and say, even if his touches on for his jumper and his hook shot to get himself going offensively, he's still not able to turn that into an impactful performance. And again, asterisks, early days, rookie, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah.
But to say, and he's playing against Joel Embiid, who's an MVP candidate right now and had 33 and 17 last night. But at a certain point in the third quarter, it was very clear that Rashawn Holmes was outplaying Ayton, and then Ayton had a string of 9 points in the fourth quarter that kind of trumped that point and got people in my mentions when I tweeted that in the third quarter. But it's something to keep monitoring, is how does his statistical... I'm not trying to make the same point we always make, but I'm saying if he has 20 and 10, are there some nights where that 20 and 10 is really awesome, and there are some nights where that 20 and 10 is kind of whatever? Because he had 15 and 13 against San Antonio, maybe? It was a couple of games ago where I was like, he was really good in that game. I think it was San Antonio.
Yeah.
Where it looked like another one of his double-doubles and every other whatever.
And it looked quiet.
But it wasn't actually quiet, and his performance on the court was actually there. So it's this really interesting kind of skewed graph kind of all over the place of how that trend goes along. Speaking of trends, the Washington Wizards are an absolute dumpster fire. Shouts to the NBA. Like, we have this Jimmy Butler thing going on, then
we need something new.
As soon as that ends, Draymond Green and Kevin Durant get into it, and then as soon as that's kind of boiled over, it's like the Wizards are like, don't worry, we're back to being an absolute mess again.
I honestly have not read very much about the Wizards' internal workings other than the original story, I think, from Woj. I think Shams had it first, maybe, but I read Woj's story, and the only thing since then was I watched Bradley Beal's interview with media today, and he was just like, you guys know this happens in like every locker room, right? Like, we don't hate each other. Like, this is it. I know that sounds like he's just like doesn't want to talk about it, and he said, I don't want to talk about it, but this stuff gets blown out of proportion because what isn't out of proportion is that they might be thinking about moving them and blowing it up. That's obviously huge, but them hating each other and all that is just kind of this what happens in NBA reporting. It's like, you got to find a reason.
Yeah, Zach Lowe made a really... I was listening to his podcast on the way in here, and he made a really good point that ever since the Jimmy Butler thing, people kind of, reporters are realizing, oh, this is going to get an absolute metric load of clicks if I tweet out players going at it. There was the moment, I didn't even tweet about it, when Josh Jackson got pissed at TJ Warren during the game, where Josh Jackson was throwing an inbounds pass, T.J. Warren didn't get open, and Josh slammed the ball down and yelled at him. And I just thought, well, that's just Josh. I mean, he's very competitive and is mad that his teammate didn't get open. They don't hate each other. But then it was like a Josh Jackson erupts on teammate headlines everywhere, yeah. And it was just like... Argh.
I get mad at Kellen when he tries to steal my story angles during games, and then we have fights, and then we get over it, you know?
Yeah, you guys don't hear about it, though, because...
Yeah, because we don't put it out there.
No leaks out here in these streets. So, the Wizards, obviously, the Bradley Beal angle out of this is the most interesting from a league-wide perspective. John Wall, we should address first.
Don't do it,
but he has a... I didn't even realize this until a couple weeks ago. He has a... But I'm not willing to rule it out just because Suns.
Yeah.
He has a trade kicker, meaning that the Wizards would have to pay him $21 million if he gets traded before July 1st. So, on top of trading him... And all that, you've still got to pay him, which means it's very, very, very unlikely that he gets moved. But with that being said, I'm never willing to rule it out because Suns. So I think he's more of a name to address in the offseason. But this all becomes interesting because when teams like this blow up, there's always one guy that is the crown jewel, really, of the entire offerings in terms of, hey, we're going to blow it up. And that's Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal's a two guard. He is very, very good at basketball. I was looking this up and I was looking through his stats.
I looked it up
before.
Google said he's really good.
I was looking it up as we got on. And I was just like, man, he's really good. He's averaged at least 20 a game the past counting this year, the past three seasons, and his true shooting percentage in those years has been at least 56. He had a year, his All Star year, I believe, he had like a 60 true shooting percentage and averaged 22.6 a game. Pretty good at the basketball, Bradley Beal. So my question to you and what we just talked about is Bradley Beal low-key the next Kyrie, Harden, Kevin Love graph of players, and we're overlooking it right now just because he isn't a point guard and all of that?
As far as like just how is this good
the,
he is.
Is this the next guy the Suns should give up a significant amount for or explore up a significant amount for?
So he, to me, is... I don't know if other people view him this way, but I view him like he's as valuable as Book is right now. He's just older and maybe he's topped out a little more, but he's that kind of player right now. He's 25. Can score 25 a game. Doesn't get enough credit for being a playmaker, I don't think. And I don't know. Is he that bad of a defender? He's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a weird fit because of Booker, and then that's where Point Book comes in. But here I go again on you don't need a true point guard to run this offense. You need guys who can dribble the basketball and play make and make reads. Bradley Beal can do that. Bradley Beal can shoot. Bradley Beal can play good enough defense. Bradley Beal can also get paid a lot, and that's where obviously you're going to send some money that way, but you would have to have a plan. So let's say they wanted to get Bradley Beal, or they just like Bradley Beal. Like, what do you have to do around him on this Suns roster? What else would you have to do to make that work, I guess, is the question.
Mm-hmm. The main point from what you just said that's the most important is that in this system, it works. So if the front office, which I would hope after 16 games, is still committed to Igor Kokoshkov long term, acquiring Bradley Beal makes a whole lot of sense. I don't think in Igor Kokoshkov system you need to look at this and say we're doing a three-guard lineup. I don't think you need to look at it like that at all. You can start Booker and Beal in your backcourt. Do your best Dame CJ impression in Portland, yada yada, championship ceiling, blah blah, whatever. I hate that crap. Mikal can guard a point guard. I have more concerns about your defensive front court with Ayton and whoever else is there, honestly, more so than that starting.
But that's kind of unrelated.
Backcourt, but it is unrelated. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you
have Ayton.
I just kind of tailed off on the championship ceiling point for zero reason at all. I shouldn't even entertain it. Beal is under contract for two more seasons after this year, so he's not under control for a very long time, but he's under enough control where he can give up a lot to get him. I think this is exactly the type of guy they should be going for right now. He's in his mid-20s. He's an all-star. He's under control for two, essentially three more seasons, and is a guy that is going to help you go in the right trajectory. We saw last night in the game, Booker just needs another guy with him. He needs another primary ball handler with him, and then he is going to reach another level, and by default, this team is going to reach another level. And I think Bradley Beal can be that guy. And look, if you make this type of deal and you have Bradley Beal walk when he's 28 and become a free agent, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I think it's more about finding the transitional guy, which I think turned out to be Kyrie Irving in a perfect scenario, really, to get this team up to what we've talked about, which is 36, 40, 45 wins, whatever. And then the Booker Ayton regime and with Bridges and whoever else is left over really starts to get going. But the main point is Igor Kokoschkov has to be the guy long term, because I think his system is what makes this work. What would make this work between Devin Booker and Bradley Beal backcourt. Now the question is, what would you give up? I was listening to Zach Lowe on the way in here, and he said that Beal is available, but the price tag is at the point where, is he really available? How much are they going to ask for? Type of situation. I don't think you can, obviously, like Devin Booker, DeAndre, and we're not even going to talk about that.
Yeah.
I don't think you can give up Mikal Bridges in any deals at the moment in terms of this type of magnitude. I mean, if you're going to get a top 10 player, of course you give up Mikal Bridges. But in this type of situation where you're trying to keep the long term structure of the team in place, I don't think. Would you?
No. I'm using draft picks if I'm going in on that.
So what are you going in with?
Josh Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Bender.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the question is, would you trade, like, you got to trade like Trevor just to get the salaries up there.
So,
or Ryan Anderson.
Me and the homie Rich Anthony were going back and forth on Twitter last night about this. Yeah. And looking at deals. The one that he presented, which I like, is Jackson, Bender, two picks, the Milwaukee pick, and then what I presented was...
Yeah, you need that.
You need the Milwaukee pick in there, and then your own first-round pick for the next, let's just say three, for the next 3 years is top five, or for the next 2 years is top five protected, and then after that it's unprotected.
Yeah.
Because at that point, I would like to think that you're not picking in the top five after you get Bradley Beal. Even if you started 3-13, I think you'd be able to recover enough. And then the next year, obviously, you're not going to pick in the top five with a Beal Booker backcourt. And I would throw in TJ Warren, too. Because I think in a deal like this, you need... That's just not enough. Josh Jackson's a former top five pick in his second year. But with that being said, I think his value is taking quite a bit of a hit. And he just isn't a big enough trade piece. If we were having this discussion, maybe...
You could
keep
him and then trade TJ. Even that, just because roster sense, that makes sense. But... Yeah, as far as value, you might have to include TJ.
I think you look at that and say, okay, TJ Warren is the player you're getting in this deal. We're giving you back one quality basketball player right now under control. If he keeps shooting, look, if he drops off his shooting tremendously and he still shoots 34, 35% from three, he's a pretty great offensive player on a good contract right now. And that's how you could look at him from the Wizards perspective. You're getting a cost-controlled, good forward in this league. You're getting Josh Jackson, who you can take a chance on still. Dragan Bender's kind of just a, hey, if you want him, here he is type of deal. You get a potential lottery pick, very, very likely, honestly, a lottery pick this year. And then the Milwaukee pick, another late
first.
Yeah,
I don't think you have to give up that much.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Though, I'm saying in terms of the grand offer to get this done, that's the type of offer I would throw
in. I think
in.
The key is, though, like, you don't even have to include Bender and or Jackson in that, but the key is that first round pick. Like, they're not going to buy it on a top five protection. If you do top five and falls off to top two next year, I would say they would believe in that. But it's also a matter of, like, you want returns. Like, the Suns are the only team that I can think of off the top of my head who have people got upset over a pick that's from 2021 being dealt. Like, people want returns kind of soon.
Yeah.
And I know things have happened in the past where things just keep getting pushed back because they have protections on them. You don't want that. If you're trading Bradley Beal, you want returns soon. So I think that first round pick would be it. And yeah, like TJ and that first round pick are the things that if you're the Wizards, you would be like, all right, that's, I'll keep you on the phone. Let me talk to my boss man who's, yeah, the Wizards boss man's there. You know,
I'm also operating in that headspace I was when we talked about Terry Rozier a couple weeks ago, where just get this done. Like we need to get going now. Just get this done. He's a 25-year-old all-star guard. Great fit offensively. Just get it done. You have him for 2 more years. Now you're looking at a potential 40-plus win team next year. Now you're in your third year of DeAndre Ayton, your fifth year. Now that would be the sixth year for Booker. Booker's an all-star by that point. Now you're really looking at a playoff position. Mikal Bridges is kept developing, and then whoever else you have around them is whoever else you have around them, but that's like that's your core four going forward.
What about Otto Porter? What are your thoughts there?
He makes slightly too much money, and the Suns kind of have this guy named Mikal Bridges already.
Yeah.
If the Suns would have drafted Dante DiVincenzo and held on to that Miami pick, we'd be looking at that Otto Porter situation, I think, a little bit differently.
I think it was Rich and Jacob or usual Suns Twitter folk talking about this that I can't remember, so sorry, but there was argument over fit. And yeah, Otto could play the four with Mikal playing more like 2-3. That's fine, but like, he's making $27 million over the next 2 years. His contract's basically the same as Bradley Beal's. Like, it's for what? He's like, I look at his numbers and I'm like, this is exactly what Trevor Ariza is doing for $15 million, and people complain about him.
26, 27, and 28 with a player option in 2020.
No. Hard no.
No, thank you.
I don't hate Otto Porter, but, and I thought this going in, and then I looked it up and I was like, oh, I hate Otto Porter's contract. I definitely do.
Counterpoint. What if you say, screw it, throw in Trevor Ariza to that deal we just talked about and get back Otto Porter and just go for it for the next 2.5 seasons?
But that, if you're really going to go after free agents, then that's the whole point of Trevor Ariza existing on a one-year contract.
Yeah. That's what I just thought that would be funny. What if they got Beal and Porter?
It would be like, yeah, this guy's doing the same thing.
God,
better. He's a little better than Trevor Ariza, like if you look on paper, but it's the same stuff. It's the same type of player, is what I'm trying to say.
Man, the Ryan Anderson deal would just kill them the next year if they kept that, because they would have Booker making 26. Those three guys would be making nearly like 80 to 90 million combined.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious. Just to win 42 games. Wouldn't that make NBA Twitter really excited?
I just want to see the Suns do something in free agency just for fun. Any more thoughts on that? We're going to go into a real quick hit thing. Do you want to do like positive things since it's almost Thanksgiving and we should be thankful for some stuff or whatever? Or do you want to do just takeaways?
I think we can just do takeaways. I don't think we need to limit ourselves. This is a 3-13.
I don't like positive stuff, says Kellen.
It's a 3-13 basketball team that isn't.
That's
like who's watching Zion Williamson right now? Do we know? Who's watching that kid in Dumbia or whatever his name is overseas? Who's watching him right now for the Suns?
Do we have scouts here?
Is anyone watching Darius Garland in the SEC right now?
You should try to get hired for this possible job opening and say, I'll just do it. I'll just hit the DVR
so,
at the very least.
I think we just go rapid fire. We say our thing, say a little bit, and then kind of go back and forth here.
Okay.
My first point I had up was just the Suns are my main takeaway 16 games in. The Suns are just in an incredibly perilous position right now as a franchise. They talked about winning, improvement. They're 3-13.
Fired their GM.
They fired their GM 9 days before the season. They are improving as a basketball team right now, but even if they play well in the last 2 to 3 months of the season, they're still looking at another 20 to 25, 26 win season right now at the current pace that they are on. And it appears that there is no end in sight until they fix their roster, because their roster is incredibly flawed right now. And I think that is really the only takeaway you can have, because, oh yeah, they're not interviewing GM candidates from what we can tell. They're not interviewing people scouts to scout. It's very tricky right now. Now that could have happened. It seems like something they would want people to
know. They would probably put out a press release.
They would probably put out a press release if they've done it by now. So it's a bit concerning because we are now a month into the season.
College basketball is happening. I don't know.
But yeah, I think that's a nice, I'll swing a positive before I go back to you. Mikal Bridges is very good. Sometimes weird things happen in the draft where you look at that guy and say, I don't get how he can be bad, and they're bad. And you're like, what? Hey, why is he bad? I don't understand. Mikal Bridges looks really good. I loved his defensive instincts have really shown. The steals and the blocks and just the playmaking as a defender is really there. The three-point shot looks great. And he looks really good. He just looks like everything that they wanted when they traded up for him and gave up that Miami pick.
My takeaway first, I don't know why I'm doing this after I was like, let's be positive. Oh, you should pay attention to summer league and training camp and preseason basketball. You know why? Because, yes, we know Marcus Banks once lit up the summer league. And sometimes people can surprise. But you know what people can't do? People cannot be lottery picks and look awful. I mean, if you have a good example, you can tell me I'm wrong, but don't be a lottery pick, look awful and all these things, and then come into the season and expect them to look completely different and like they've gotten better, because Josh Jackson, not good. Dragan Bender, not good. DeAndre Ayton looked exactly the same as he did in summer league, and he's improved. But yeah, my takeaway is that mattered.
When the New Zealand Breakers cut it down to single digits in the fourth quarter in the preseason, that might be a cause for concern that you might want to actually properly react to instead of saying, oh, it's just preseason. DeAndre Ayton has had things for me where I feel better about him than I did coming into the season. I think his passing has translated very well. I think that his overall, there's some things you see when you watch guys coming out of the draft and in their rookie year where you just see it once and then it's just gone forever. You've talked about it a lot, and what I mean by that is you see his hands and the way he catches balls around the rim and just the way that he looks compared to all these guys. I think you tweeted in the first preseason game, you're like, oh yeah, DeAndre Ayton looks huge compared to all these other huge guys too. And his match physically and just his match skill-wise, the talent and skill with the ball seems to be there in his feel. Is another story, but for now, I think every part of his overall draft prospect package that led to this could be a once-in-a-generation big prospect is there. Now, if that blossoms into a once-in-a-generation big man,
great,
remains to be seen.
Oh.
And we've talked about already the pros and cons and just both sides of that argument thus far. But everything, it's not like he's coming to the league and you're like, oh, this guy was the top pick. It's clear why he was the top pick, and that's good.
He's a unique man. My second thing will be, TJ Warren has, knock on wood, been healthy through this small period, which you hope, just looking back at recent Suns, like Alex Lang got hurt early in his career a lot. Same with Book, same with TJ. You hope that it's just like a you got to take care of your body, young man thing. When you get older, you figure that out, you get stronger, you get hurt less, and then you produce more. And just going back to the summer when we didn't know the we still don't know what the Suns are doing with all their wings, but he was the kind of odd man out. It was like, what is he going to do with Ryan Anderson, Trevor Ariza? He's the best of their wings right now. And he's doing it because he's getting better. Like, we knew he was a great mid-range scorer. He's playing decent defense. He's trying as much as the other guys. And that contract now looks as valuable as you hoped it would when he signed that extension. And that's been a real positive, because as much as we talk about, like, they need another playmaker, they need, like, TJ has his, you know, not flaws even, but just things he's not going to do. But one thing he can do is be a great secondary scorer, and we've seen that.
The offseason that was hyped by many, including us, as a great offseason is TBD right now, because the Ryan Anderson trade I talked about was just about moving on, getting Brandon out of here, getting Marquise Chris out of there. Don't think it was about Ryan Anderson that much. With that being said, Ryan Anderson has been worse than we expected, and Trevor Ariza has gotten off to a bad start this year, but Philly game was good. Looks like he's a little bit more comfortable. Now let's see how this lineup change affects him more specifically. But to that end, to the draft, DeAndre Ayton has been a good player for this team overall. It's a whole lot better than whatever else they would have had center with Tyson Chandler and whatever. He's been a positive for them in a lot of stretches. And then Mikal Bridges obviously has been maybe the bright spot of their season so far. So the offseason as a whole, you can say that it's been not as great as it was promised, but at the same time, I think it has delivered in certain aspects, and I think the TBD has to do with Ariza specifically, how he plays over the past next month and a half heading into that season where it looks like a buyout or a trade could be coming. I'm going to rack off one more here. Devin Booker's injury status, they keep piling up. It's concerning, and it's going to be something to watch over the next 3 to 4 months to see how many more rack up, because if he just keeps getting these little things here and there, it's looking like one of those, you tweeted this at me last year, it'll look like one of those graphics they pop up where it's like, here's a list of all of Allen Iverson's injuries in the past 36 months. And it can be one of those types of things pretty quickly where it's wearing him down too quickly. And not extremely worried yet, but at the same time, if the current path continues where he has 9 or 10 of these things a year that are popping up on injury reports and are not just little things. Like, they're not even mentioning his hamstring on the injury report. They haven't for the past 2 weeks, but it's still a thing. It's something that can pile up.
I'll just close by going NBA-wide. This season's, like, how many things have we had? Warriors fighting. Wizards blowing it up. Like,
Jimmy Butler. The Celtics looked like they were going to dominate the Eastern Conference, and the stat that Zach Lowe had on his podcast, I keep shouting that podcast out. It's recent in my head. Their starting lineup of Horford, Tatum, Brown, Hayward, and Kyrie Irving has a 91 offensive rating together. How does that even make sense?
Raptors are good.
Yeah.
Bucks are really good. Clippers are somehow fun. Knicks are somehow fun. Like, everything that you hoped for to make this season, not just the Warriors are rolling everyone, which they still probably will, but it's been a lot of fun. The Suns, obviously, even a 3-win team at this point in the season, there's been a lot. So I'm thankful for that part of it.
Yeah, one more Suns one to close. I think Josh Jackson's in a low-key contract year. His team option for his fourth year is $8.9 million. Don't think you're at the point yet where you can say, yeah, we're going to decline that. It's not a Dragan Bender situation yet, but they did it to Bender, and he was making $3 million less than him, and they have this guy named Mikal Bridges who's pretty good. They have this guy named TJ Warren who's pretty good, and that's how Bender's went. He came out in his second year and got all this playing time, got a lot of starts, and did not really show much at all. And how much is Josh's play this year going to dictate the decision they have to make at this point next season? Is to your original point at the beginning of this whole spiel, which was all of this stuff matters leading up to it, how these guys look, and it's going to matter a whole lot for him if he can rebound this year, because if not, we might be looking at another situation where they decline the option, because that is specifically at a time where they are going to be wanting to spend that money even more so than with Bender next offseason.
Way to end it on a negative point, Kellen. Thank you.
Hey, Devin Booker is really, really good at basketball. He's very good.
Oh, yeah. We probably should have mentioned that.
He scored 37-8 last night. It looks like when he's healthy, he's still one of the 15 to 25 best players in the NBA, depending on where you want to rank what.
We will be back after this Thanksgiving break. Kellen's going to be going to the games. I'm going to be hitting up at least one game next week. By the way, we're on Spotify now, in case we didn't say that, which is very possible, but we should be on Spotify. Tweet us if we're not, because we're trying to put our podcast wherever you want to listen to it. Already on iTunes, all the different
TuneIn apps. I think we mentioned
apps.
iTunes like months. Yeah, subscribe to us on iTunes and Spotify if you haven't.
Wherever you best do your podcast listening, do that. And we thank you, as always, for listening in, and hope you all have a great Thanksgiving as well.